sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 23. I'm your host, Sean, from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm still not sleeping. I've been up since 3 a.m.
Oh, dear. That's...
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, Adam, this week Aaron complained that Weird and Baron have fancy bumper intro music, and she wants one. Do you have any ideas for her?
Let it go. Let it go.
I'm pretty sure that Disney would have something to say about that.
I'm pretty sure that our listeners would have something to say about me singing. Ever again.
Well, yeah, it might be true as well. Why don't we open it up to our listeners? Here's your chance to make your mark on the podcast. Make us up some bumper intros for Aaron, Nikki, and Miguel. Also, bonus points for putting any My Little Pony voices into Aaron's bumper.
And Miguel's.
Well, and Miguel's too. Yeah. If you can get a Spanish-speaking pony, that'd be hilarious. Record it in WAV format, upload it to Google Drive, and share it with me, Sean at SeanSorrentino.com. All submissions become our property and may be used on the podcast. We can't pay you anything, but if we ever get any Gunblog Variety Cast swag like a hat or shirt, I'll send the winners one. Let's start with a tactical dog and fitness report. 28.7 dog walking miles last week, and the big news this week is the squirrel tennis ball incident.
What is the squirrel tennis ball incident?
So, there's this tennis ball. It's an outside toy, according to my wife, so the outside toy stays outside. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a little... It's like half a French door. We have a swinging glass door instead of like a sliding glass door out onto the little back deck that we have.
Okay.
And there's, you know, it's glass.
It's a full pane glass door.
Well, no, it's you got three. It looks like three doors, but only one of them actually opens.
Okay.
And, you know, it's got the little crossbars in it. You know, it looks kind of nice. But you can see out onto the deck, and the tennis ball sort of lives out on the deck. And occasionally my wife will go out on the back deck and pick up the tennis ball, throw it over the railing. The dog will race down the around the deck, down onto the grass, go get the ball, run to the stairs, run back up onto the deck. And they'll play catch. And my wife never has to leave the deck.
Mm-hmm.
But the tennis ball is sitting out there. And, you know, my wife's not thinking about it, of course, because she got other things to do. And the dog starts whining. And she's like, "You knock it off. I hate it when you make this noise. Whine, whine, whine." And she's really insistent. And so my wife looks out the window, and there's a squirrel. And not only is there a squirrel there taunting my dog, the squirrel is chewing on the tennis ball.
Oh, now see, in my house, that wouldn't have been a little whimper. That would have been a full-on, I'm going to get out of this house, tearing at the door.
Oh, she was running towards the door. Like, let me out, let me out. I'd have let her out. I mean, I'd have snuck her around the side so she could sneak up on that squirrel. But by the time my wife figured out what was going on, and if I'd have been there, it would have taken me even longer. So I can't point the finger at her. But, you know, the squirrel was gone, but, you know, she's like, "Get him." And the dog hit the glass, like ready to get through the door. It was hilarious. So, yeah, it was the most horrible thing ever. Not only was the squirrel there, the squirrel was eating her tennis ball.
That's pretty awful.
Yeah.
So, at some point this last week, I went to go take Tactical Dog out, and I have learned my lesson. She now either wears a training collar, or she just goes out in the back where we have a fence. Because of the whole, you know, chasing that dog like a half mile down the street.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I'm glad that we did that because there was a rabbit at the base of the stairs and shoom, gone. Just running around the yard. I mean, I could hear her have her body up against the chain link fence and just running the length of the chain link fence. You know, just chasing after this rabbit. And I had a flashback when she was about 4 months old. We were living in a different house, and we let her outside, and she had found some baby rabbits. And by baby rabbits, I mean they were like 2 hours old.
Uh-huh.
That was quite a traumatic experience for me, watching her go after these little baby rabbits.
Yeah, my previous dog did the same thing. Mommy rabbits leave their baby rabbits in a little hole covered up, mm-hmm. and they only go there like twice a day or however much to feed them. But they stay away, and that's how the rabbits survive, and nothing goes near them. Well, my dog, Zuka, the old dog, mm-hmm. I was walking her, and she was sniffing the ground, and she sniffed rabbits. She went in the hole, grabbed a baby rabbit, shook it, spit it out, and was about to eat it. And I snatched her off it, right?
Yeah.
Well, of course, when I take her for a walk the next day, she goes right back in the hole. But I'm not thinking about it. I'm like, she already got there out. No, there's two rabbits in there. She killed the other one, too.
Nice. Nice.
Well, every single time I walked her, she went for that hole until the day we moved out of that apartment complex. Because there might have been a third rabbit in there.
That's where the treats are.
2 years.
Yeah. Well, personally, I'm also now running 2.8 miles. Last week, it was 2.5. Every run day this week, I've woken up and gone, do I really want to run that far? But I keep doing it, so that's good. I'm actually going to do a 5K in March, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah.
On a previous podcast, I told you that I've been using my fancy new $50 microphone and my free download of Audacity to mm-hmm. do some narration work. Well, there are a couple of podcasts that do audio fiction, mostly short stories from the 2,000 to 6,000 word length. After the first one I did, which was Nine Lived Wonders, that came out on Drabblecast, episode 345, I emailed some of these other podcasts and said, hey, you know, check it out. I'd like to read for you. Right after Christmas, the fantasy fiction podcast called Podcastle asked me to read a 2,300 word story called The Colors by John M. Shade. I really liked it. It was a great story. It's a first-person story where a superhero sidekick tells about the terrible life in a sort of a post-apocalyptic world where the villains have taken over.
Oh.
It's pretty grim, but if you stick around, it might get better at the end. Here's a little taste of the story. The trucks roll into town like a fog, muted colors and brands dotting their sides like worn heraldry. Soon the spikes are down and Slugoth is pouring the sand. Rhyme lifts the tents with cool arctic winds from his fingertips. Panoply's clones hammer nails and put up boards, and everything starts to look familiar again. In the main tent, around the sand and dirt floor of the arena, a wooden wall is erected 8 feet tall. The worn, angled seating rises from there. A makeshift gate sits on the side where the opponents emerge, and another across from it where I emerge. Real boulders dot the floor for cover, or weapons, or both. Everything is wood or stone. Nothing metal. I've had plenty of enough experience with magnetic controllers to know that a little fire ain't so bad, Mother Circus would say.
If you'd like to see how it comes out, check out Podcastle episode 347, Great Power, Greater Responsibilities. The link's in the show notes, or you can search for it on iTunes as Podcastle. That's PODCASTLE, episode 347, and that's dated January 21, 2015. My story is the second out of the three. And while you're at it, check out the first podcast that I did. That's the Drabblecast, episode 345, Cat with Blue Fur Trifecta. That's the Drabblecast, DRABBLECAST, episode 345, dated December 18, 2014. My story is, again, the second of the three. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Aaron's going to talk about the 12 C's of preparedness. Aaron, you've been giving us a long list of equipment that we should be carrying. Where is this leading? Do you have any kind of a plan with this?
Yes, I do, Sean. There's a fellow named Dave Canterbury who is a big name in survival training. He was on Dual Survival back before it sucked. And he has a mnemonic called the 10 C's of Survival that help people if they're out in the wilderness and an emergency occurs. And these 10 C's are cutting tool, combustion, cover, container, cordage, candle, cotton, compass, cargo tape, and canvas needle. If you have a good memory, you'll realize that I've talked about most of these over the past few months. Combustion and cutting tool are the fire starters and knives that I talked about earlier in January. Now, cover can mean either an improvised shelter, like trash bags, or proper clothing for inclement weather. Something like a military poncho could actually perform both tasks.
I think I've used those for both those tasks.
Exactly. Container is a water bottle, which I talked about last week.
Uh-huh.
Cordage is paracord. Last year, I suggested that preppers replace their shoelaces with paracord, and just last week, I recommended that folks wrap their water bottles with more paracord. Candle doesn't literally mean a candle. It just means a light source, like a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, cotton is supposed to mean a bandana, but I believe a shemagh is better. And while a compass, a needle, and some duct tape are always welcome, there are a few items that I think are better suited for a prepper's everyday carry.
I was going to ask you about that. I'm not going to go out into the woods. I live a fairly urban life. I mean, yeah, compass, needle, duct tape. Well, duct tape's probably useful, but I mean, are there some better things for just normal people who live in a normal urban environment?
Well, I think so. So here are some more C's for preppers. Caliber device. I mean, this is the gun blog variety cast. So of course, I'm going to endorse carrying a defensive firearm. What you carry is up to you. I'm not going to step in that quagmire. Cartridges. Carry spare ammunition. Carry as much as is comfortable. I mean, we can't all be awesome like Jennifer Hast and carry 45 rounds of ammo. But if you can, go for it. Cell phone. This one, pretty much everyone's going to have, because not only is it useful for emergency communication, but it's also a source of information. Most smartphones can hold quite a lot of books in PDF format. So if you need information on wilderness survival or first aid, you can have an app or a PDF for that. Charger. Well, keep your phone charged so that you always have a lifeline.
Yeah, you suggested that at one point, that we get one of those, you know, cell phone chargers. We keep that charged up. And I have one. I have one in my car. And if I have a situation where I'm running low and I don't have a way to charge my phone, I can always use that. And there's nothing worse than watching your phone go to nothing.
Exactly. And a lot of these have a built-in flashlight, so you get twice the utility out of one object.
Uh-huh.
And the final C is compression bandage. And by that, I mean a trauma kit. Now, I'm fortunate in that I've never needed to use one, so I can't speak from experience in this matter. But from my research, I like and own the Adventure Medical Trauma Kit because it's got quite a lot of things in it. In addition to the trauma pad, it has quick clot, it has gauze, it has rubber gloves, it's got a triangular bandage, and yes, it even has some strips of duct tape in it. So if you add those five C's of preparedness to some of the other C's, including cutting tool, container, etc., then in my opinion, you'll be prepared for just about any emergency.
Excellent, Aaron. I'm looking down your list. It looks like I've got most of that stuff in the car at all times, and I'm going to make sure that I get the rest of it, and that way I'll have a full kit.
Great.
Aaron, what is important about this to you?
It's important because in any emergency, you are going to be the primary responder, and a lot of times you have to self-rescue. And it's really tragic to look at people in an emergency and they have no idea what's going on and they're helpless. I do this because I want people to not be victims. You know, I can't really teach people how to shoot. I can't teach first aid. What I can do is give suggestions on how not to be completely blindsided when life decides to take a dump on you.
All right, Aaron. It was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
So Aaron mentioned the Adventure Medical Trauma Kit. I did a post about 3 years ago about a gunshot wound kit that I built that has, you know, some of those things in there, but it's got an Israeli bandage and some hyphen chest seals and some other things. It's pretty inexpensive. I keep one of those in my car and one in my wife's car because as a carry permit holder, I have a non-zero chance of running into somebody with a gunshot wound, and I want to be able to be prepared for that. I know last year, ambulance driver gave a class at the NRA convention. I'm pretty sure that he's announced that he's doing one this year as well. So I encourage everybody to go to that class, learn how to use a gunshot wound kit, and go ahead and get one.
Excellent. Felons behaving badly. Dateline Raleigh. A state wildlife officer has made the first arrests under a new North Carolina law that makes it a felony to poach Venus flytraps from the wild.
Okay, What?
Venus flytraps, you know. Feed me, Seymour. They're actually really small and they can't eat you. They eat flies. They're flytraps.
But they're native to North Carolina?
The officer, along with Pender County Sheriff's deputies, arrested four men in the Holly Shelter game land with 970 flytraps, according to the State Wildlife Resources Commission. The arrest took place January 3rd, a little more than a month after the new penalty went into effect and were announced this week. Venus flytraps live in bogs with nutrient-poor soil, getting their nutrition from the insects that they trap between their leaves. Their only natural home is in southeastern North Carolina and northeastern South Carolina. Digging up flytraps in the wild for resale to flea markets or on the internet has been a misdemeanor, punishable by a fine of up to $50. Last year, the state legislature passed a bill making it a felony that could bring up to 25 months in prison. The Pender County District Attorney's Office identified the four arrested men as Suspect 123, Suspect 249, and Suspect 322, all of Holden Beach, and Suspect 4, 30, of Supply.
So, let me ask you something. Is that really something that you should lose your voting rights and your gun rights over?
Interestingly, I thought the same thing when I was reading this. I'm like, are you seriously? A felony? I looked up the law. The law is 14.129.3, felony taking of Venus flytrap. Any person, firm, or corporation who digs up, pulls up, takes or carries away, or aids in the taking or carrying away of any Venus flytrap, and I'm not even going to attempt the Latin name for this, plant, or the seed of any Venus flytrap plant growing upon the lands of another person, or from the public domain, with the intent to steal the Venus flytrap plant or seed, is guilty of a Class H felony. Well, a Class H felony is not up to 25 months in prison. It's actually 5 to 6 months for the first offense. And generally speaking, on a first offense, they're not going to give you actual jail time. They'll give you probation or something. I'm like, seriously, stealing Venus flytraps. There's something that I want everybody to read. Go to the show notes, and underneath the suspects, there's going to be there's a little story from WUNC. And then there's this podcast, This is Criminal, episode number 5, Dropping Like Flies. The date on that is 4/24/2014. This theft of Venus flytraps is incredibly bad. They're very endangered, and they're killing them off. What everybody thinks is going on is that they're taking these Venus flytraps and they're selling them to a company who's turning them into some patent medicine for cancer. They think it cures cancer or some stupid thing.
Okay. Why wouldn't they just breed them then?
I haven't the slightest idea. Okay. But apparently these guys, they swear up and down, we're not buying, you know, wild flytraps. We're genetically engineering them and we're growing them in the lab and a bunch of other stuff. But how in the world is there money in stealing Venus flytraps? But these guys, I mean, everything's economic. You don't go steal something if you don't have any, what are you going to do with it, right? If you can't sell it,
right?
What are you going to do with it? There's nobody who's going to go out there and risk even a $50 fine, really, for Venus flytraps are little. They're little tiny things.
Yeah,
what do you want? One of them? 10 of them? 100 of them? I mean, seriously, what are you going to do with them?
Well, they had almost 1,000 of them. And if you go to a flea market and sell them for $2 a piece, you know, that's $2,000.
Right. But they actually don't do that. Then nobody's really sure where they go.
Huh.
And it's really bizarre. I encourage everybody to listen to the podcast. Like I said, This is Criminal, episode 5, Dropping Like Flies. Listen to it. It's bizarre. Let's take a look, though, of the four people that they caught stealing Venus flytraps and charged with felonies. Suspect number 1, robbery with a dangerous weapon, conspiracy, 11-8-2013, felon class E.
And now he's reduced to stealing plants.
Felony stealing plants. Suspect number 2, common law robbery, 2-15-2002, felon class G. Suspect number 3, misdemeanor breaking and entering, 7-13-2010, misdemeanor class 1. Larceny, 7-13-2010, misdemeanor class 1. Receiving stolen goods, 8-26-2013, misdemeanor, class 1. And suspect number 4, wanton injury to persons or property, $200, 7-10-2009, misdemeanor, class 2. Possess stolen goods, 7-17-2010, misdemeanor, class 1. Possessing stolen goods, 7-17-2010, misdemeanor, class 1. So we're not talking the good citizens going out there and getting some Venus flytraps for their garden. We're talking actual criminals who were involved in, and believe it or not, organized criminal trafficking in Venus flytraps.
That sounds ridiculous.
It sounds absolutely bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. I don't even know what to say about it.
What are you in for? Robbery. What are you in for? I stole a plant that like five-year-olds like.
Yeah, seriously. Well, this week in Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki talks about some foreign policy fails. Hey, Nikki, I've been wondering, what is going on with this administration? This whole John Kerry taking James Taylor to Paris, it sounds like the foreign policy equivalent of a teenage boy making a mixtape for a girl he doesn't have a chance with. What is going on over there?
Well, it's an apt comparison. I call it foreign policy fail. For those of you who haven't heard, the Obama administration was a massive no-show at the recent Paris demonstrations in support of Charlie Hebdo, the magazine that published those Muhammad cartoons, and whose cartoonists were brutally murdered by radical Islamist scum. Okay, I understand. I know the demonstration was a staged photo op. It actually makes sense, considering the security concerns of having that many heads of state in one place. I get it. But it was staged to show that the world stands together against terrorist maggots. So, meanwhile, our administration sent some unknown ambassador to France, who's some kind of former media executive, and they admit it. It was a major screw-up. But to make matters worse, to smooth relations with the French, John Kerry, our Secretary of State, brought hippie icon James Taylor over to Paris to sing You've Got a Friend. Now, I love the song, but this is what our foreign policy has become, really? A string of just these ridiculous failures followed by attempts to smooth things over with the rest of the world? Ridiculous! So, for this administration, this is apparently true. That's what they are. In their attempts to appeal to this kind of young, hip audience, they've engaged in a series of gaffes that literally have left me speechless and embarrassed. This is what our foreign relations has become. Of course, foreign policy failures aren't just limited to this administration. The war on terror was a really cool slogan until you realized you're waging a war on a tactic as opposed to a group or a nation. And the now discredited national security estimate that assessed there were still weapons of mass destruction in Iraq sent us into that nation based largely on reporting from a known nut job known as Curveball, who claimed to have worked as a chemical engineer at a plant that manufactured mobile biological weapon laboratories as part of an Iraqi weapons of mass destruction program. Curveball, in fact, was a German intelligence asset in whom the BND had increasing doubts. The guy was described as a loon. He was essentially seeking asylum in Germany in exchange for information. He fed them about the weapons program and got his information off of Google. We suffered from a massive case of cognitive distortion in this case. We jumped to conclusions. We filtered out all that we didn't want to see or hear in order to arrive at a predetermined analytic result. We engaged in emotional thinking. We were still raw from the 9/11 attacks. I get it. We arrived at the conclusion we wanted to arrive at based on evidence from a source who was increasingly proven to be, well, nuts.
Okay, so what about this administration?
Well, let's look at some more recent fails. There was the reset button. As a Russian speaker, the stupid of this just absolutely killed me. It's hard for me to believe that the State Department didn't consult its numerous linguists to ensure that the reset button with Russia didn't come off like amateur hour. During that foreign policy gaffe, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton presented Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov with a gift wrap red button, which said reset in English and перегрузка in Russian, in an effort to convey the message that the United States wants a clean slate in its Russian relations. Problem was, перегрузка doesn't mean reset, it means overcharge or overload. What they wanted to say was перезагрузка, or reboot, but what's a little typo, or опечатка between friends, right? And Obama's foreign policy failures continued with this refusal to call terrorism what it is, terrorism, and its failure to recognize Islamic terrorism as a solid, realistic threat. The Islamic attack on Fort Hood by a radical Islamist scumbag became workplace violence. The recent attacks in Paris were downplayed by the chattering, vapid spokesholes at the State Department as part of a bigger extremism problem, instead of calling it what it was, Islamist terrorism. And we won't even go into the arrest of the tool who made that ridiculous anti-Muhammad movie and the blame for the terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi that was laid at his feet. Good Lord! So then there was the embarrassing fail on Syria's foreign policy in 2013 that left me facepalming for weeks. First, Obama literally lied about setting a red line in Syria's use of chemical weapons for the use of military force. And then even the media, even the Washington Post, were left wondering, WTF, hello? And prompting former CIA director and former SecDef Leon Panetta to brand this as a huge credibility-shredding fail. But then Vladimir Putin got involved and actually stopped any talk of U.S. military action in Syria by proposing a simple solution that Syria's chemical weapons be placed under international control, relieved any pressure on the U.S. to abide by its quote-unquote red line and send troops in. The gaps and lunacies are too numerous to mention in detail here. Remember the hashtag campaign that didn't bring back our girls? Remember the description of Islamic State as the JV team? One kind of gets the feeling that if that's the JV team, Obama's foreign policy team is probably elementary school kickball.
All right, Nikki, it was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com. Strange laws. So, did you hear the story about the guy who got a ticket for eating a cheeseburger while he was driving in Georgia?
Yes, and my first reaction was, fun with headlines. This sounds so ridiculous. There's got to be more to the story than he was eating a cheeseburger.
I thought that too. I started reading it, and you know what? You expect, fun with headlines, the headline says one thing, the story says something different.
Right.
The problem is the headline says one thing, and the story says the same thing.
Right.
Right, so I looked into it a little deeper, and helpfully, they posted a picture of the ticket that the guy got. It says the section of the code that he violated, 46241. So, Dateline, Cobb County, Georgia. With our long commutes and busy lives, many of us eat in our cars. But did you know you could get a ticket for it? After a busy day of errands, Madison Turner pulled into a Cobb County McDonald's, grabbed a double quarter pounder with cheese, and was on his way. He was biting into his burger about a mile away when he was pulled over by a Cobb County police officer and ticketed for eating while driving. Baloney. According to the photo of the ticket he received, he was ticketed for violation of Georgia Vehicle Code 40-6-241, driver to exercise due care.
That means he was driving like an idiot.
The most basic law of driving is you need to exercise due care while you do so.
Right.
Don't run into people. Don't do things that make it look like you're going to run into people.
And in fact, you could have just this law and cover like 90% of any traffic violation.
Absolutely. In Georgia, this is the law that they use to get you if you are texting while driving. It's a section, it's like a subsection of this law that says you can't text.
Yeah, we actually have a completely separate law for that.
Right.
It's the stupidest thing ever.
Right, but is the problem that you're texting? Or is
no.
the problem you're driving like an idiot?
The problem is you're driving like an idiot.
Well, let's take a look at the law. The law says, a driver shall exercise due care in operating a motor vehicle on the highways of this state and shall not engage in any actions which shall distract such driver from the safe operation of such vehicle, provided that, except as prohibited by Code Sections 46241.1 and 46241.2, the proper use of a radio, citizens band radio, mobile telephone, or amateur or ham radio shall not be a violation of this code section. And I looked at those two sections. They don't apply in this case. The operative language in this is shall not engage in any actions which shall distract such driver from the safe operation of such vehicle. I mean, that's like the most basic law there is about driving.
Right.
What else do you need, right?
Right.
Don't do anything stupid. There's no mention in the law of any particular things that might be a violation, and there's absolutely no mention whatsoever of a cheeseburger. I looked twice. But what is this really about? What's really prohibited? Can you eat? Yeah, of course you can eat. Provided, of course, that it doesn't distract you from the safe operation of your motor vehicle. Once they get to court, the cop will have to explain to the judge what the vehicle was doing that indicated to him that it was being operated unsafely. I suspect that the guy who got the ticket will have his pick of lawyers trying to defend him. But I also expect that the cop's going to show up with a dash cam video, and it's going to go pretty quick.
Yeah. And I also suspect that eventually this will show up in one of those, did you know it's illegal to eat a hamburger while driving in Georgia?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we covered that in one of the episodes, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Well, this week on Al Arma, Miguel talks about CSGV and the anti-gunners swatting gun owners. Hey, Miguel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Hey, did you hear about the homeowner that shot the sheriff in Oklahoma?
He shot the sheriff?
Yeah, he shot the sheriff.
Did he shoot anybody else?
No, he shot the sheriff. I shot the sheriff. I was, you know, doing my usual patrolling in Facebook, and I came on a post by the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. And they're talking about this gun nut who's got a Facebook page with guns and whatnot, shot the sheriff. You know, he was but he was a black sheriff. So they were going all freaking crazy about it, and, you know, how's that possible? And, you know, once again, you know, shows that the gun owners are a bunch of racists, blah, 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 blah.
Wait, so he was walking down the street, he saw a black man who happened to be the sheriff, and he shot him?
No, that's why I went to look into the story a little bit. You know, I went to the news item itself. And as it happens, it's in Sentinel, Oklahoma. Somebody had called a bomb threat at 4:30 in the morning. So he had put a bomb in a local school, elementary school, and he gave his name. All hell breaks loose, they go to the school.
Yeah,
school.
The sheriff ran straight over to that dude's house, I bet.
First they went to the school to make sure there was no bomb. And after that, they went over this guy's house. So they go into the house. You know, I guess they broke the front door. They go in, and the sheriff, who didn't have a bulletproof vest right before the event, the dynamic entry, he had to, somebody gave him one, put him on, broke, went into the house, and he got shot 4 times by the homeowner. 3 in the chest and 1 in the arm.
What time in the morning was this?
6 a.m. Long story short, the guy was arrested. He was interrogated, and then let go.
Wait a minute. This guy called in a bomb threat, and then when the sheriff came into his house to arrest him, he shoots the sheriff 4 times, and then they don't press charges? They just let him go?
They let him go. They let him go because there was no evidence that, number one, he knew that the people breaking into his house were law enforcement officers, and number two, they couldn't find that the guy actually planted a phone call about the bomb. Apparently, this gentleman by the name of Dallas Horton, who's the homeowner, was swatted. Swatted, which is the stupid thing that some people have, that they spoof the caller ID, the number they're calling, including 911, and they report some outrageous crime being committed that requires the police to respond with a high degree of violence, if possible, and see if it can get the guy that you're targeting in trouble. And this came very, very close to have a very bad ending. The only saving grace is, like I said, the sheriff got shot 4 times, and 3 of them were in the chest. They were caught by the bulletproof vest. This has happened before. It's happened before to gun owners. We have our dear friends of the gun control movement, especially the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, who have no problem telling people to go ahead if they see somebody with a gun to call the cops and tell them they're doing things. Not long ago, we had the issue with John Crawford III in the Walmart.
Yeah, I saw that one. That was horrible.
And with somebody calling and start, you know, telling all kinds of things about this guy doing this with a rifle. And it was a plastic rifle, and the guy was not waving and pointing at anybody, but, you know, ended up with a very strong response, and he got killed. What investigation Mr. Horton came to be, and that's by the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, was that none of the funds in his house, none of the funds he had control over, none of them, the bomb threat came from. So that's why eventually he was released. We gotta give props to the police, the rest of the police force, that they didn't shoot the guy after he shot the sheriff. That's professionalism right there. I don't know what is going to happen. Somebody is going to end up, again, being killed because of this stupid thing. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how to make sure that none of it never happens again. But, you know, if it happens and they catch the guy, I don't think there's even legislation, because basically what they're doing, you know, is filing a false police report.
Yeah, basically. I think it's very interesting how this Coalition to Stop Gun Violence acted like it was some kind of a racial issue.
They are the very, very weird, very, very violent people in the gun control movement. They went crazy. They were latching at trying to make it like another Ferguson, I guess. And, you know, the only reason that this guy is walking around because he's white and he's in Oklahoma and all that, and you know, gun owners and the cops are all racist.
Cops are all racist. He shoots the head police officer in that county, but, you know, cops are all like, well, you know, we're not going to press charges. Come on now.
You read the post on that thing, and it was, people were actually saying, almost swearing on a stack of Bibles, that it was a conspiracy by the rest of the cops in the force to kill the chief.
Oh, man. It must be interesting inside their heads.
And these are the same people that are encouraging others to go ahead and call the cops when if they happen to see somebody with a gun, legally carrying a gun. I'm not talking about a criminal. You, me, anybody. And some this idiot is going to go ahead and call. And if you're up in an up and carry state, even worse. Okay, that happened to another guy that he was on a 7-Eleven. He bought some drink or whatever. He came out. And all of a sudden, like 30 minutes later, like a bunch of cops on top of him. And he pulls over. I mean, he goes down on the ground, hands up, whatever. And it's like, oh, a call came that you robbed a 7-Eleven 30 minutes ago. And the guy, what? Who? And that's an under investigation by the Virginia Citizen Defense League. Because it was to one of their members, but they haven't said who, but they know it was a known gun control activist who made the call. You know, it's the desperation of some petty people. They are willing to get law-abiding people killed in order to further their agenda, and that is scary as hell. There should be some serious punishment if they ever catch this guy in Oklahoma, to save if it's possible to nail him with an attempted murder or something like that. We are dealing with people that are deranged, living in a little world. Gun control activists that actually wish us ill. We have to be careful because they will swat you. They will have no problems killing you. I mean, they are all for non-violence, but they don't mind if the violence is visited upon you.
All right, Miguel, it was good to talk to you. I'll see you again next week.
Take care.
Get more Miguel Gonzalez Daily at gunfreezone.net. And a little update. After Miguel and I recorded this segment, they arrested the person who called in the bomb threat.
Good!
On January 20th, officers questioned suspect about his alleged involvement in the bomb threat. Suspect confessed that he used Horton's name and called in bomb threats to 911 because he was angry with Horton.
That's a great thing.
Suspect told OSBI agents that he used two separate, non-functioning phones so that the phones could not be traced back to him. So he's angry with Mr. Horton, so he set off a chain of events that ended with the county sheriff getting shot four times. This guy needs to go to jail.
He needs to go to jail for attempted murder of a police officer.
You know, if we can figure out a way to make that stick, I would totally vote him guilty.
Yeah.
Fun with headlines. You got a good one for us this time.
I do have a good one. Market shooting has Madison business owners on edge.
Dude, if there was a shooting at the market I worked at, I'd be on edge too.
Yeah. So there was a guy in the market, and there was another guy in the market, and guy A shot guy B.
Yeah, I mean, totally be afraid of that.
That's horrible, right? Now you know, I'd be scared too. Well, the good news is they caught the shooter.
Uh huh.
He was the clerk who was being robbed at the time.
Wait, no, the person doing the shooting was a good guy?
Yes.
So what is everybody on edge for? The bad guys got shot. The good guy gets a big thumbs up from everybody involved, right?
Yeah. So apparently, if you go and read the article, they're all on edge because, well, this kind of thing happens. They get robbed a lot out there. But it's not the shooting that's got them on edge. It's the fact that somebody tried to rob one of the Madison businesses yet again.
Editors.
I know. You know, and it's almost like they want to make it sound like the clerk did something wrong by shooting the guy that had a gun in his face.
No, it's just link bait.
That's probably what
click,
it is.
Click this.
Most of these are link bait, and I totally fall for it.
Yeah, well, glad you do, because some of these are pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, this week, Barron pours some cold water on the idea that cops will start using radar to search your homes.
Tech tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech tips with the Baron. So, Baron, I'm seeing these police are suddenly going to get these radars, and they're going to start looking inside my house, and I'm really terrified by this. What can I do to keep them from radaring me inside my house?
Well, one, first of all, don't freak out about it. So, it ends up that this is actually largely more hype than anything. From what I can tell and dig up, it's basically a modification of what's referred to as synthetic aperture radar. From the people I know who work with that, current real-time processing ability of that is not exactly a small computing task. The amount of processing power requires a couple racks of servers and it does it near real time, but not true real time. It still takes about 10 seconds. So the idea that some officer is going to have some little handheld unit to point at your house and go, he's in that room and they're in that room and here's exactly what the floor layout looks like. Yeah, that's not going to happen. In the end, you can't really tell details using radar of what's inside of a house because you're going to have numerous things interfering, such as house wiring. If you have aluminum siding, you've pretty much shielded yourself and prevented any of this from working. If you've got metal bracing in your studs, if you have TVs, other things will interfere with it, such as Wi-Fi and the rest of it.
So what you're saying is I really don't need to worry about this. They don't have the technology.
They do not have the technology to actually pull off what a lot of people think that they can. What is disturbing and is scary, and the reason we should all be concerned, is because of the Fourth Amendment implications of them trying to use technologies like this and what that really means for freedom as a whole. Because while this isn't really technically feasible with, say, radar, there are other technologies that can be used to, say, wiretap and glean other information, such as you had, I think it was, what, a year or 2 years ago, a young man discovered a GPS tracking device that was placed on his vehicle by the FBI. He found it, took pictures of it, posted it up on the internet and says, does anyone know what this is? And they showed up at his house a couple days later asking it for it back.
I get the impression that they don't look at the Fourth Amendment and say, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't do some of these things. What they're looking at the Fourth Amendment is saying, well, how can we get around this most effectively?
That is exactly how they're looking at it. And what is scary is there are a couple technologies out there. For example, you can actually go look at this online. We'll put the link in the show notes. A couple grad students did a research project where they used the webcam of, you know, your Apple MacBook Pro, or if you have a Windows PC, there's a way you can actually get it to work with Windows. But they can actually tell your pulse by looking at your forehead. I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating. You stare at the screen and it locks on your forehead and you sit there for about 15 seconds and it starts giving you your pulse in real time. This is amazing because if you think about it, you and I aren't noticing any real noticeable change in our forehead. I don't know about you, but I can't watch, you know, even high-res video of my forehead and see my pulse actually doing anything. Yet, there's enough information coming from the camera that they can notice slight differences in the red hue that's coming off of your skin due to the change in blood flow. And this all comes back to another technology which MIT demoed, where they were able to recover the sounds being made in a room purely from just video. So we're not talking video and audio with the video. They just took video of a plant and were able to use the plant to figure out what people were saying within the room.
So they could see it moving?
The camera itself could technically see that it's moving. What they actually ended up doing, and it's part of the device physics of image capture, but basically you have red, green, and blue, and they could tell shifting within those channels, and then they were using that to actually go through and get what was going on. Plus, coupled with the fact that the MIT demo was doing a 8,000 frames per second frame rate, they were shooting at a very, very high frame rate to get enough data to be able to go and recreate audio. But what they did do was they then determined that they could go back to, say, standard frame rates that you could get out of a webcam, or even, you know, 120 frames per second, which you can get out of a GoPro. You couldn't get full speech, so you couldn't really tell what somebody was saying, but you could tell the sex or gender of the person who was speaking. If you had an existing audio sample, you'd even be able to identify if that was the person in the room. But instead of really worrying about what exactly was said, it's linking people together and trying to build a case up that way. Which, okay, I understand. The job of the police is to go catch a criminal. At the same time, they need to respect the Fourth Amendment, and going and pointing a camera at my house just so that you can, you know, zoom in on the potato chip bag sitting on my desk while I converse with a friend of mine. If you don't have a warrant, please do the world a favor and fuck off.
All right, Baron, it was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org. So I saw a very interesting article that talked about how the movie Frozen is about gun control. Did you know it was about gun control?
I did not know it was about gun control, and I've seen the movie at least a dozen times.
Yeah, you keep complaining that you have to see it a lot.
You know, it's okay.
This is how dedicated I am to this podcast. I deliberately told Netflix to send me a copy of Frozen, and I watched it.
And you don't have someone under the age of 5 living with you.
Right. In fact, my wife abandoned ship. She's like, I'm not even going to be in the house. My wife doesn't like musicals.
But it was a good movie.
It was a really good movie. I imagine that it was probably really good the first 3 times you watched it.
Yeah. Now, not so much. On the way home, he was quoting stuff from Frozen, and we haven't seen it in 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, Lord. So this article is pretty interesting. One thing about modern Disney princess movies is that they're so easy to label with a message. Any message. Look at Frozen. It's about accepting yourself. It's about letting your artistic talents flow. It's about gay rights.
I'm not sure about that one.
It's about overcoming oppression. It's about gun control. Wait, gun control? Well, gun suppression more accurately. Nonetheless, insert guns into the narrative and you'll see what I mean. Journey with me on a magical message adventure. Lock and load, people. Picture a fairy tale world where there is great power. Magic. From a very young age, Princess Elsa is adept at using magic. So the parents, apparently too busy being royal, haven't set any particular rules or set boundaries. It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt. In this day and age, children aren't always taught to respect guns, and guns aren't always carefully secured against curious little hands, as witnessed in the tragic shooting of a mother by her toddler who pulled a loaded gun from her purse. It's not the magic, or the gun, that's inherently evil, but the misuse, lack of supervision, and irresponsibility that lead to the tragedy. No one else watching Frozen is thinking how magic should be banished, even though Elsa nearly killed her own sister. But when a tragic shooting occurs, the knee-jerk reaction is to get rid of all guns. I wondered about that, and I watched it, and I'm like, wait, there's a certain amount of sense to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when I saw the article, the headline, you know, because I'm always fun with headlines, I was like, no, that's not, no, stop doing that thing that other people do where they try to make movies about something that they're not.
Right.
Well, and then you read, and it's like, oh, well, actually, no, he's got some pretty good logic there.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. When confronted with something that gives a child a lot of power before they're responsible enough to use that power morally, many parents refuse to teach that responsibility. They just try to lock up the power.
Yeah, so I've got a friend of mine who's got a kid 4 or 5 years old, and her plan for gun safety is making sure he's never around any guns.
Oh, yeah, that's likely.
Yeah, yeah. I asked her for idea of water safety is never having him around water, and she's like, no, that's silly. Of course I'm going to teach him how to swim. Like, oh, well, okay.
It was pretty clear where she was going when she wrote this article. Yeah, you know, the little troll, rock troll, very cute
yeah.
trolls.
Yeah.
They were absolutely cute. I would totally like let trolls like that live in my house. I think you could totally stay in my garden. Like, best trolls ever. The troll was really very clear. You need to teach her how to handle this stuff. And they're like, no, we'll just not let you do anything and lock you up and make you forget about it. And yeah, that makes a great deal of sense. Check out the link. Absolutely watch How Frozen Should Have Ended. A hilarious video.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
It's on the link. You've got to watch it. It's funny. I do have a couple of points about the movie.
Spoilers.
Yeah, not really related. Spoilers, if you haven't watched it. Why was there no foreshadowing that Prince Hans of the Southern Isles was a bad guy? I mean, seriously, it was like, you know, they're like, oh, well, the villains are dead. We need a new villain. Oh, we'll have this guy that everybody likes turn bad, like for no good reason.
Well, if you watch it 7 or 8 times, you see the foreshadowing.
Yeah. You know what? If I missed it, it's not foreshadowed enough for children. Okay? You know? Come on now. And I was wondering, where are they going to go with this? Like, you know, is Anna going to go with the guy that she's already with? Or this Kristoff guy is really nice. I mean, he's a decent fellow. He's got a good relationship with, you know, the
reindeer,
which is a great character. The reindeer's awesome. It's like they got to this point in the movie and they said, oh, how are we going to resolve this stupid love triangle we've created? Will Kristoff decide he really loves Queen Elsa, leading to a double wedding? I know. We'll suddenly, without any warning, have Hans turn out to be the bad guy, even though we already had the Duke of Weaselton and his 2 sons. That'd be awesome. No, it wasn't awesome. It was stupid. Everybody has some stuff to talk about the song Let It Go, right? Because, like, every little child sings this. My problem with the song? The singing didn't match the animation. Did you notice this? Like, This woman singing has just got some power.
Yeah, I didn't notice it until you mentioned it, but then I started, you know, thinking about it because, you know, I've seen it, I don't know how many hundreds of times. but you're totally right.
Right, you got this little girl who's dancing around, and she's singing with a level of power that I'm just not used to out of normal human beings.
Yeah, she should be quivering.
Well, I am of a certain age where 21-year-old girls are just not attractive to me, and the sort of silly things that 18 and 21-year-old girls just aren't interesting to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady who's singing the song is actually in her mid-40s. And I wanted to see the adult singing. You know, this Let It Go song is her going from a little girl to being an adult.
Yes.
So show me the adult. And what I saw was a little girl doing pirouettes
while
singing like a woman. It was kind of jarring. It's kind of a nitpicky thing, but like it really did jar me. I also liked that the movie didn't end in weddings. But, you know, it was a continuing relationship between Kristoff and Anna, but they didn't just go for the, oh, well, the story's over, everybody has to get married now. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's actually kind of a meme going around about how this is the first Disney princess movie that not only did they not marry at the end of the movie, but they actually made fun of the previous Disney movies because Kristoff's like, wait. You got engaged to a guy you met on the same day?
I don't trust your judgment. That's the best line of the whole movie.
And then she sets all of his stuff on fire.
Yeah. Which turns out to be not too bad. It did work.
Yeah.
But I thought that was pretty funny. And this thing about Frozen being about gay rights, are you freaking kidding me? I mean, that's incredibly insulting. On what planet does being a homosexual almost kill your little sister twice?
Yeah, I don't really get that at all.
Just because it has show tunes in it does not make it gay. Okay?
No.
No.
And now we've lost 70% of our listenership. Nobody else is listening to this anymore.
Go and see the movie. Go see the movie. It is a really good movie. Just don't let your children see it and force you to watch it 37 times.
Watch it once,
send it back to Netflix, you'll be good. Well, Weird pokes holes in the common gun hater refrain, there's no such thing as a law-abiding gun owner, in this week in anti-gun nuttery. Well, hey, Weird, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good, Sean. Hey, did you know that there is no such thing as a law-abiding gun owner?
What?
Have you noticed that anti-gunners, they always like to put scare quotes around law-abiding gun owners or good guy with a gun and all that, and they often use the term law-abiding gun owner until they weren't.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, well, pulled out an interesting thing from Amoland is a debate between NRA board member Scott Elbach and New Yorkers Against Gun Violence executive director Leah Gun Barrett.
Wait. She's anti-gun, but her name is Gun Barrett.
Yeah, she should really think about changing her name.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what does Ms. Gun Barrett have to say?
Well, see, they were talking about law-abiding gun owners, and she said there's no such thing as a law-abiding gun owner. You can be perfectly law-abiding one moment, said Ms. Gun Barrett, and then the next moment you can be a criminal and do something criminal and wrong, like shoot up a movie theater or kill your spouse during an argument. Regulation of people and behavior is needed, she said, to protect us against our own stupidity and our own irrationality.
I would stay very far away from this woman. If her view of the rest of the population is that, oh, at any minute you're going to snap and do something criminal. Oh, if you're going to just murder your spouse in the middle of an argument and then shoot up a movie theater. What does that say about her mindset?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually had a discussion with an anti-gun blog. And he was saying that, yeah, you can, you know, guns can make it too easy for things to go wrong. And you could, you know, shoot somebody during an argument or something like that. And I said, let's do it with you, Sean. Sean, what do you have at the end of your arms?
Fingers?
What happens if you roll those fingers up?
A fist?
Yeah, a fist. And you've got a wife, right?
Yeah.
When was the last time you balled up one of those suckers and clocked her?
Well, I don't really like to hit people. And I especially don't like to hit people that I like. And I have to sleep sometime. Even if I was the kind of jerk who did want to hit his wife, I do have to sleep. So that's not the sort of behavior I get involved in.
Exactly. And it's the same thing with me. I have a wife, and my wife's very strong-willed, and so am I. And so sometimes we have some pretty serious arguments. But I've never hit her. never smacked her around. I've never, you know, picked up a frying pan or a kitchen knife or anything like that and hit her. So what would be a gun being any different? If you're going to act impulsively and shoot someone with a gun, wouldn't you have already acted impulsively and done something brash before?
You would think.
And that's an interesting thing. This brings us over to the myth of the virgin killer.
The myth of the virgin killer. What is that all about?
It's a study done by a bunch of guys who did a meta study of other studies on violent crimes. And here's an interesting quote to pull out of it. Murder is a very unusual behavior, and perpetrators turn out on investigations to be extreme aberrants. Studies of homicide uniformly find almost all murderers different markedly from ordinary people in having life histories of violence, felony, psychopathology, substance abuse, restraining orders, and so forth. If there's an argument for banning guns to the entire populace, it must derive from some other basis than that ordinary citizens are likely to commit murder.
And isn't that what we've been saying all this time? You and I are unlikely to commit murder, and we've proven that we're unlikely to commit murder because we haven't committed any other crimes either.
That's right. If you're going to shoot somebody, you're also going to ball up your fist and hit somebody. You're going to swerve your car off the road and climb somebody on the sidewalk. You're going to get set off by other things, even if you don't have a gun with you.
Right. And I think that that points out directly what kind of person Ms. Gunn Barrett is. Ms. Gunn Barrett thinks that you can just shoot up a movie theater or kill your spouse in an argument, and that's why she needs guns far away from her, because she knows that if she got in any of these situations, that's what she would do. So she assumes that you and I are the same.
Yeah, and no, we're not even remotely. She should speak for herself.
Exactly.
Lawful and legal gun owners simply don't commit violent crimes at any appreciable level. This is dishonest tactic by anti-gunners to malign lawful gun owners, which makes sense because every gun law passed doesn't actually apply to violent criminals, since generally only adds minor crimes to the major crimes they intend to commit.
And that's exactly true. All right, Weird, it was good to talk to you. I'll see you again next week.
Good to talk to you, Sean. Talk to you later.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host at The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. Stuff that grinds my gears. Adam, last week you stole mine, so I'm going to make you go first so you can't steal it this week.
Well, I didn't really steal it. I glommed you just jumped onto the end.
Yeah, yeah. You got to come up with your own this time.
Yes. So if you go to a eating establishment, like a Subway or a McDonald's or, you know, something like that, and there were 15 or 20 people in line in front of you when you were ordering, your order is not going to be the next one that comes to the counter. All those people that were in front of you that are now standing behind you, they're waiting for their food. And if you stand directly in front of the counter, you're just going to be a jerk. So don't do that. That actually happened to me last night and again this morning. I was like, what is this? Don't do that. Don't be that guy.
All right. Short, sweet, to the point.
Yeah.
And you know what's bugging me? Protesters who block the traffic on the highway.
Oh.
Okay, these people need to die. This is just acting like an asshole. This is narcissism taken to the nth degree. I have a simple plan that will prevent this from ever happening again. Police just simply announce that they will not intervene in removing protesters from the highway. Protesters have a symbiotic relationship with the cops. You know, the cops are going to arrest them. That's why they're there. They know the cops are going to arrest them. But see, the police protect them from the really angry commuters who would beat the crap out of them if the cops weren't there to stop it.
And the ones in Boston had their arms chained inside concrete barrels, so they couldn't exactly run away or defend themselves.
And those barrels weren't chained down, as far as I could tell. So you get a couple of guys, drag the barrels to the edge of the road, and leave the dude there. And then just go about your day. Their problem, not mine. If they freeze, get rained on, people throw McDonald's bags at them as they drive by, not my problem. Their problem. Well, the protesters change themselves to each other, or the road, or like you said in Boston, to cement-filled barrels. This is our nation's highways we're talking about. You can't tell me that in the middle of rush hour, we don't have working men who are handy with tools and willing to use them. Just make sure to take the cameras away from the guys wearing those neon green hats. You saw them?
No, I didn't.
On the Boston one, they had a couple of dudes with green hats on the overpass, legal observers, right?
Oh, they were...
They're from the National Lawyers Guild, which is a communist legal organization. And they're literally a communist organization. It's not me, like, you know, McCarthying them. They are communists. Those guys are up there with their little cameras. They're like, oh, we're going to get you in trouble if you react to them in the way that you really should react to people who act like that.
Right.
Yeah, let me ask you a question here. If I was going to go rob a bank and I said, here, put on this green hat and come and watch me do it. That way I know that somebody will be there to see that my rights get respected if I get arrested. Wouldn't that make you
an accessory?
An accessory?
Yes. Yes, it would.
Yes. So those bozos up there with the green hats, they're accessories. So make sure to take them out too. Like I said, make sure you take their cameras away first. That way they can't be, oh, look at this horrible person did some horrible thing to me. Bottom line, let the cops stay home just one time and allow the commuters to handle the problem, and it will never occur again. I promise you.
So here in Nashville, our chief of police has decided to basically not so much coddle the protesters as actively participate and actively shut down the interstate for them. And if he heard what you just said, you know what he would say? Why are you such a racist?
Oh, God.
He actually wrote a letter to a guy who basically said the same thing that you did. The undertones of the letter were, have you really tried not being so racist? And stop being such a Republican.
Yeah. Appointed or elected?
Appointed.
Figures.
Yeah.
Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music, and thank you for listening to the Gun Blog Variety Cast. Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com and hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com. Show notes can be found at GunBlogVarietyCast.com/episode 23.